Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Madison Kavarna, a beef nutrition field specialist based out of Watertown. For our loyal listeners, I am so happy you're back with us. And for those of you who are new here, welcome to the herd. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Justin Wagner from Kansas State University, where he is a professor and an extension beef cattle specialist. Justin recently presented at the Siouxland Feedlot Forum, a joint venture with SDSU Extension and UNL, University of Nebraska-Lincoln, regarding a feedlot closeout data set that they've been working on down at K-State for almost 30 years. I won't steal his thunder with any more details and will leave you on a little bit of a cliffhanger for now, but I'm excited to have him joining us on the airwaves today and can't wait to pick his brain. Justin, I do want to give you some time to introduce yourself to our listeners since it's the first time you've joined us on here on Cattle HQ. Could I convince you to give a little backstory on yourself just to start us off?
Yeah, sure. Well, great to be here with you today, Madison. It was certainly a great opportunity to get to present up there at the Siouxland Forum. And so we'll get to kind of share this data with a few more folks up in your part of the world. So, as Madison indicated, I'm an extension beef cattle specialist with Kansas State University. Actually, I've been in my role here for 17 years. Seems like a really long time when I say that. But started this role in 2008. I'm a native of Central Kansas, fifth generation Kansan. So family's been involved in agriculture for quite some time. Goes back a long ways. Doesn't mean we were necessarily good at anything as a family. So, but we certainly stayed with it for a long time. So, there's something to be said for that, I guess. So was raised on a pretty diverse operation. So my grandparents actually had a farrow to finish hog operation. My parents ran cattle and horses. So, got to see kind of all aspects of animal agriculture, several different aspects growing up. I got a couple degrees from Kansas State University, so bachelor's and master's there. My master's is actually in equine nutrition, which always, people find kind of interesting as the beef cattle specialist. Worked in the cattle feeding industry for a couple of years before making the decision to pursue a PhD. And I finished up my graduate work at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces. So going from, central Kansas to the desert Southwest, if you will. So there's, quite of a shift there. So there was learned a lot about range beef cow production down there. And as, as this position came back up open here in Western Kansas, I am based in Garden City, Kansas. So we're certainly in short grass country, so that fit very well with, kind of my experiences down at New Mexico and at New Mexico State, and also having the cattle feeding background. So Garden City, if for most of you are familiar with the cattle feeding industry, this is really kind of what I call the epicenter of the cattle feeding world. As you run the Highway 83 corridor from Amarillo, Texas, all the way up into Nebraska, there's more cattle on feed probably in this part of the world than anywhere else. So that's kind of an exciting, tidbit, I guess, if you will. There's more cattle on feed within a, 60-mile radius of Garden City, Kansas than anywhere else in the world. So at least that's our claim to fame here that we like to kind of talk about here in Garden City. So, yeah, that's a little bit about myself, maybe more than what you wanted to know, but certainly, I think kind of paints a picture for your listeners there.
Yeah, no, I think it's always fun to, I always leave that question pretty open-ended just to see what people share. And if it was me, I probably would have shared that I'm originally from a town called Lamar's, Iowa, and our claim to fame is the ice cream capital of the world. A little cooler, maybe? I don't know. But I think I'd much rather be from the cattle feeding, main headquarters of the world. But ice cream, I guess, has got a pretty close second for my heart, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting claim to fame there. Ice cream. It's pretty hard to top that one. So
if you ever see Wells Blue Bunny in the stores, that's where it's made, is Lamar's, Iowa, a little humble town. So we've got all sorts of claims to fame all over the place. But I derailed us on that one, but to bring us back to the beef cattle side of things, when I attended the Siouxland Feedlot Forum, I was, started off taking a lot of notes, during your presentation and was really trying my best to be a good student in the back, trying to keep track of everything. And then eventually I got so sucked into the data that I kind of stopped taking notes and just kind of sat back and listened and actually digested what you were talking about. And the data set that you have, and we're going to talk about here in this episode, is extensive and contains a lot of good data. And when I say a lot, I mean a lot. And when I say good, it's very good stuff. But can you give us a little bit of an origin story on how this data set came to be and maybe how we've gotten it to this point?
Yeah, sure. So I just feel like the data that we put together is more of a snapshot. A lot of people, when we will throw out some of the numbers here in the minute of what we've kind of put together here at Kansas State University, but it's really just it's a fairly small picture of the cattle feeding world. So I always kind of like to put that in perspective. So the data set that we're talking about, or that I spoke about up there, comes from our Focus on Feedlot data set here at K-State. And so this is the Focus on Feedlots is essentially a monthly, I'll call it an extension newsletter, but it's really just a feedlot closeout and performance summary. So if you get the Focus on Feedlots, you can get it via email. We can get that to anyone. We can talk about how to get that directly to your listeners if they're interested, later on as we kind of wrap things up. But, it just looks like a table of numbers. And so essentially what it is each month, I make a few phone calls, a few emails, and collect closeout information really from 5 yards. Most of them are going to be in Western Kansas. And so what really makes the Focus on Feedlots unique is the history and the timeline that we've been able to capture that from. And so we've actually got the data within this data set. So it's feedlot closeout and performance, as well as some commodity prices that goes from 1990 to present month. And so really, where the strength that I think of this data comes in is just, getting to capture that amount of information over that 34-year time period, right? In terms of the history, it's obviously there's 34 years, but the focus on feedlots actually goes back much earlier than that. Started in the late 70s is what I'm told, and changed and was up and going into the early 80s with some of our, really the first extension feedlot specialist here at Kansas State University. And it really started as an extension feedlot newsletter that had a few nutrition articles, a little bit of benchmarking, if you will. It was very early in terms of, what does performance really look like across 5 to 6 different yards across the state. And so really that effort, the newsletter has kind of fell away over the years. But today what we have left is really the meat and potatoes, if you will, of just that feedlot benchmarking effort. Typically, right now, we collect closeout information on, I'm going to say, 15,000 to 20,000 head of steers each month, and somewhere around 12,000 to 18,000 head of heifers each month. So, in total, from 1990 to 2024, I think there's a little over 18 million head of cattle that would be represented in these closeouts that we'll kind of talk about in the data that we've put together. So, yes, it's extensive. That sounds like a lot of cattle. It is, but when you put that, really in the context of the feeding industry in Kansas, that's a fairly small snapshot of it. I think typically month in, month out, I haven't calculated these numbers for a while. But we would capture numbers on about, 20% of the fed cattle slaughter each month in the state of Kansas. So, really about 20% with those 5 feed yards. The other thing that's unique about the focus on feedlots, I think, that, speaks to the commitment of several of these yards is oftentimes there's been ownership changes within the yard. And so the name on the door will change, or the name on the office will change, or the sign out front, but we are still able to get that data. So we have several feed yards within this data set that have actually been a part of the data. I don't know who's been in it the longest, but a few of the feed yards certainly have been in there well over 20 years. And so I think that adds a lot of value to it, where you've got the same system, the same operation, in that same location. So we have seen some consolidation. So we used to do about 10 yards. Some yards have, as yards grow bigger, as yards, purchase other feed yards, et cetera, that number's been reduced to 5. But we're still, that's still a very respectable number of cattle that we're able to capture data on each month.
Yeah, I was gonna say when you started, I was gonna ask you if you didn't mention it, so I'm glad I didn't have to put you on the spot of how many head of cattle are contained here on a monthly and just yearly basis. And you summed it up perfectly of it's a lot of cattle, but in the grand scheme of things, maybe not as many as we really may realize are out there. And all I also can pick up on is that maybe there needs to be some internal review on who's contributed the most data for the longest time. Maybe not available to the public, but maybe some internal pat on the back, maybe a little participation award needs to go out.
Well, and probably one of the greatest challenges I think I have, is keeping this data set going. As you think about, things you inherit as you come into your position, and this has a lot of value to Kansas State University, the academic community, to producers. And so, there's always a, how do we keep this going, especially in Kansas, we're essentially an industry that's dominated by corporate cattle feeders. Some of those may be family-owned corporations, right? But that data has a lot of value. And so just the fact that they're able to still share and have that willingness to share that data with us, I think is really speaks volumes to their commitment to Kansas State University and kind of keeping this information out there and available to producers.
And that's another kind of thing I wanted to mention too is, while this data is Kansas based, I think there's some big trends that we'll dive into and kind of pick apart that, maybe the data did come from Kansas, but ultimately all fed cattle across the US, no matter what state you're in, these trends apply. And, a lot of things have changed in the feedlot industry and a lot hasn't either. I mean, we're still in the game of getting cattle bigger, getting some condition on them, and sending them for the food industry to feed the United States and the world in general. But how we do that has changed. And can we dive a little deeper into the changes and maybe some of the stay the same that we've been seeing? I'll kind of kick us off and maybe put some scope on our conversation to start of, talking about that weather and feed conversion component, maybe some death loss or just that market volatility that we maybe see just across, not maybe, we do see it across the feedlot industry. But any thoughts on those from you?
Yeah, so I think you bring up kind of some interesting points because it's always as we when I talk about this data set with producers, there's a lot of conversation about how the industry has changed, where we were at in 1990 versus today. Some of the things that you mentioned, the largest challenges that I think we face in the cattle industry, regardless of whether you're in the cow-calf segment or you're in the feeding industry, weather is a big one, right? Weather and feed conversion and commodity prices, market volatility, as you kind of brought it up. And so, I think those are consistent, across whether it was, in the early 90s or the 2000s. The one thing, as I think about, we'll talk about maybe feed conversion for just a minute, because I think that's a feed conversion and maybe cost to gain a little bit. When you look at our long-term data sets, oftentimes in terms of feed conversion, right, a bigger number means more pounds of feed to produce a pound of gain, right? So when you see the 34-year data set that's out there, you'll see some of these huge spikes within this data across these yards. And oftentimes those spikes, if you go back and overlay that with weather data, and 2019 is a great example. 2019, we see kind of a large spike in terms of feed conversion, where feed conversions were just relatively poor in the state of Kansas. Well, Garden City, Kansas, we actually received 38 inches of snowfall in 2019. So it was a fairly long, cold, wet winter. I'm sure your producers can relate to that, but obviously that creates a challenge for us, and an open lot, extensive environment where typically we don't see a lot of precipitation here in Southwest Kansas. So, it really speaks to that, the influence of weather and how that can impact, feed conversion and ultimately, right, close out in terms of profit and loss, right? So that's a big one. I think the other one that's, kind of speaks to some of that volatility is, our data on cost to gain. And so there's oftentimes you would show, I wish I could show you the graph. But if we think about, the data that we have here at K-State in terms of feedlot cost to gain that we would track, the period from 1990 to 2008, there was really only about $25 difference per hundredweight in the highs and lows. So 1990 to 2008. We fast forward and we go from 2007 to 2025. There's about a $75 per hundredweight spread in cost of gain. So the range, in the early 1990s to 2008, really the range is about 50 to 75 cents was really where cost of gain would have, been at in terms of that time period. So relatively tight. But then as you get kind of the second half of that graph, we start to see some pretty extreme volatility where we're going from 75 all the way up to a $150 per hundredweight difference in terms of cost of gain. So it's really some extreme variability, especially as we come to, maybe some more recent time periods. A couple that jump out in our data would be the time from period from 2011 to 2014. That was a fairly volatile time. You think about in a post ethanol industry, right? And then the other time period where there's a really significant spike here in terms of the cost of gain data would be from 2019 to 2023, and kind of what we saw in terms of, I'll call it the post-COVID, hangover there a little bit, just in terms of how dynamic that was of an event in terms of changing our markets and just commodity prices and a lot of things like that. So, with that being said, it's kind of exciting to see some of those changes, although they really represented some fairly significant challenges for producers and, folks that were feeding cattle here in Southwest Kansas.
And moving forward too, I think the market, I mean, record market highs we're in right now is going to be another interesting time point to look at in a few years. Riding the high now, I mean, I've been seeing people sell cattle. I just saw some fed bulls go through, and I think they brought 222 a hundredweight in the sale barn, which is something that I never thought we would see. Or there was a slaughter bull in Kimball, South Dakota, that I think he sold for just over 6 grand for just him, just to go. And I think that's going to be an interesting change in the data and just what the data tells us in a few years when, if we start to rebuild the herds and get numbers back to where they have been in the past. I think that'll also kind of be an interesting thing. So maybe in a few years we'll have you back and talk about the updates since the last time we talked, because I think we'll have even more to talk about in a few years.
Yeah, I think that's been an interesting topic of conversation is, what's going to be the ceiling on the wean calf market this fall, right? We go back a few weeks, there's lots of sale barn reports of this is the highest, price for X class of feeder cattle. I mean, there was a few weeks here this summer where what I think it was a different sale barn report that, just about every week reached a new high for a different class of cattle. So yeah, certainly an exciting time. I think there's a lot of challenges there and a lot of it's exciting to sell cattle for those kinds of prices, but I think I, also probably become I'm a little risk averse. So there's also a lot of risk associated with those numbers too, especially as you think about retaining ownership and all those things that kind of go on down the line. So
It will be very interesting to see where we head as an industry and kind of how this all shakes out, and some other things to kind of chat about too. And you and I, prior to hitting the record button, kind of discussed this a little bit of, I mean, we're finishing cattle heavier than we have before and really kind of pushing those upper, I don't want to say boundaries, but maybe those upper limits of what we can and can't do with them, and really starting to kind of figure out the fine-tuned science between finishing cattle of that, they're getting heavier, but that increased gain and their average days on feed, we're finishing them heavier, but they're on feed longer, and just death loss amounts and what we're predicting. And I don't know if you've had any thoughts on those kind of topics there, that maybe we could discuss a little bit as well.
yeah, so that's it's actually really one of the current topics that comes up a lot with this data set. And I think the recent discussions around exit weight and greater days on feed is probably one of the reasons that I got the invitation to come to South Dakota and visit with you guys. But I think what we really have to do is take a step back and look at those the long-term data And so what our data would certainly indicate, and this may surprise some listeners, is that we've actually been steadily increasing exit weights and subsequent carcass weights for the last 34 years. I mean, there's certainly an upward trend there. If you look at our data, let's talk about the kind of the average steer in 1990, if you will, weighed 1,187 pounds. A heifer was exiting the feed yard at 1,041 pounds. So if we fast forward to 2024, and this would be an annual average, right? So we actually marketed steers in our data set at 1,461 pounds, and the heifers at 1,311 pounds. If we think about that, that's well over 200 pounds of live weight on those animals in terms of that 1990 to 2024 change. If we think about it, if we look at the trend line, that's 0.64 pounds per head per month, which extrapolates out to about 7.7 pounds per year. So the net result of that is we are now marketing cattle 25 to 23. I think the heifers is 23%, the steers is 23%, the heifers is 25% larger weights today than what we were in 1990. So, there's been a lot of conversation about that, but we've actually kind of been on this trend for quite a while. Yes, we have seen some new highs, right, as we get into to the more recent, kind of 2024 numbers here. The other part of that story is days on feed, right? And so, oftentimes, when I was in beef science at Kansas State University, we talked about, cattle kind of being on feed 120 to 130 days was kind of a typical feedlot finishing period. I'm not sure that that was maybe all that accurate, but that's kind of what we used to talk about, right? So in 1990, average days on feed in our data set for steers and heifers, I'd call it 140 days. Okay. So if we kind of fast forward to 2024, our averages now are 194 and 185 on the steers and the heifers, respectively. And so, as we kind of think about it, there's not very many cattle today, at least in these feed yards, that we'd feed less than 170 days on feed. And so that's a pretty fundamental change in terms of, we think about 120, we think about 150 days. I think today we're talking about numbers where 170 is probably a pretty good number in terms of the average. There's a lot of cattle that are going to be on feed for well over 200 days, if you look at individual line closeouts. So I think that's certainly a substantial change, right? As you think about, risk management. You also talked a little bit about death loss. What I can tell you is one of the things you see is the longer you own something, right? And most livestock producers have an appreciation for this, the greater the likelihood that something bad may happen, right? So it's not uncommon to say, well, if we start with a set of 3 weight calves and we're going to take them all the way to finish, there's a greater likelihood we may see some higher death loss just because of the increased days on feed. And so I think that's certainly the we certainly see that in our data set as well. So we didn't begin to track death loss in the data set until a little later. So about 1994 is when we really kind of have a full annual average of death loss. So death loss in the 1990s would have averaged just a little below 1%, which seems fairly low. We oftentimes talk about, penciling in a 1% death loss on a set of cattle when we put together a set of break-evens. So in the 1990s, that was probably pretty accurate. As we fast forward and we kind of get into some more modern numbers, 2024, our death loss on the steers was 2.25%, and on the heifers we were at 2.4. So as you kind of think about those increased days on feed, those greater exit weights, that what goes along with that in my mind is you have to have that conversation about the death losses. It's certainly not 1% anymore on for a lot of cattle. So as we rethink those break-even calculations just a little bit, and the death loss is going to be a little bit higher, and it would follow a similar trend with the exit weights. It's gone up as well, and maybe that's one of the surprises for us. I think oftentimes, I know as a cattle nutritionist, I often think, well, we're better at managing cattle today than we were 30 years ago. We've got some new tools. We've always made some advancements on the health side. But in spite of those advances, you know, we're still seeing that's one of our tremendous challenges, I think, in the industry is this, the death loss issue and what we can do to maybe work around some of that as well. So.
And I did some quick, while you were talking about just the trends that we've been seeing and from the beginning of this data set to maybe more currently of just higher live weights that we're seeing. When you mentioned the about a 7.7 pound increase in live weight per year, I Googled what a gallon of milk weighs, and a gallon of milk weighs 8.6. So, I mean, we've been barely adding a that gallon of milk you pick up from the grocery store to these animals each year. But when you start to do that, it brings in perspective just the small we've been making as an industry to get us there. And then and kind of with that, penciling in those death loss differences, no one ever wants to write down a 2% death loss, but if that's what we're realistically facing, if that's what it needs to make sure that you're breaking even at the end, just to be more realistic and upfront with ourselves, it sucks to write it down, but like you mentioned, there's a lot of things we're doing differently as an industry that do contribute maybe a little bit more to that, and just things that, not saying we're bad producers for that, but just things that change and risk that comes with those changes as well.
Yeah, I think it's
So
a good conversation starter for sure. The death losses, you know, as we talk about, you know, things that you see in the data set that probably represent a pretty significant challenge for our industry. You know, that one certainly is one to highlight. Like, okay, how do we improve this particular point? You know, you could, you know, feed conversion, all the other things, but you know, when you look at the death loss side of things, I think that's one where you're gonna go, wow. You know, how do we do this better, or how do we increase our understanding of that, or how do we better utilize the tools? So.
was there, you kind of mentioned that the death loss might have been was interesting. Is there anything else that was interesting to you as you, piece through this data, pick things apart, maybe things that you expected to see or didn't expect to see and you did? Anything that just that sticks out to you as the eyes behind the focus on feedlot newsletter, getting those numbers out to people? Anything that sticks out to you?
Yeah, so you know, so we've it seems like our conversation is, you know, kind of gravitated back to the death losses as that being a challenge for us, right? And I think it is. But also on the positive side of things, I think there's a really interesting story as we think about the long-term data set, and then maybe we'll kind of talk about some exciting things that I kind of look at in terms of where we've been the last 4 to 5 years. So, you know, if we think about it as an industry, okay, and the challenges, you know, that we face, and kind of our ultimate goal is to put, you know, protein in front of a consumer, right? And so we are now able to market animals and putting on 200 pounds of live weight, that's going to, you know, come into increased carcass weights as well. But we're also doing that with some improvements in terms of average daily gain and feed conversion. And so, you know, there's a story there about sustainability. We've also, in that same time frame, not only have we increased those exit weights, but we've also improved average daily gain somewhere in the neighborhood of 11%. And actually, the last few years, okay, because of the increase in exit weights and we've actually seen average daily gain go down a little bit. So at certain time points, that number has been larger. So if we compare like 1990 to 2024, but if we go back to 2020, that would certainly be a larger increase. We've also increased, you know, made some increases and improvements in feed conversion. Feed conversion, the line for that is actually relatively flat. So if we think about, you know, increased average daily gain at the same, you know, or maybe slightly better feed conversion, right? There's a pretty exciting story about sustainability. So we're certainly producing more beef with less, you know, as we talk about, well, why have we increased carcass weights? Well, we're dealing with a pretty small cattle inventory, right? So that's a pretty easy way for the industry to respond and maintain those beef supplies that our consumers are, you know, used to seeing in the retail case. So I think that's, you know, that's one side of the data, not to get too caught up in that really formidable challenge is what we see in terms of volatility and, you know, markets and death loss, but also, you know, that story about, hey, we are putting more pounds of beef in front of the American consumer and the global consumer as well. And we're doing it at, with relatively at the same feed conversion, and we're putting be able to put those pounds on at a faster rate of gain as well. So, if you kind of think about some of that, I think that's an exciting piece of that as well. So I think, the other part of that I mentioned, that I have found interesting in the data set is really this time period from 2020 to 25. We talked a little bit earlier about, kind of the post-COVID, really when we started to see one of those periods of fairly extreme market volatility. And I think that's it's been interesting to watch the industry respond the last few years as cattle inventories and supplies have gotten a little tighter, right? And we've certainly seen a rapid increase in production costs to see, okay, so as we, increase exit weights, and we certainly have seen some of the highest recorded exit weights within our data set. So I think our highest recorded average exit weight for a steer was in the fall of 2024 at 1,514 pounds on the average. So that is an average exit weight on 5 feed yards, across 20,000 head of cattle there. The heifers really about the same time frame. We actually tied, so there was a period of fairly high exit weight in some heifers back in 21, so at 1,357 pounds. So we've certainly seen those increased exit weights. But as you think about the story of the cattle inventory, reduced supplies of cattle, how has that impacted average daily gain, like feed conversion? What has that done as we've pushed those exit weights a little bit higher? So if we look at, like, the 5-year average for steer, days on feed is about 184 for the steers. April 2025, we were right at that trend line. We're actually starting to see cattle feeders, I guess I'll go out on a limb here and say we're beginning to maybe moderate those days on feed a little bit. It appears that we're starting, maybe, we've done the peak. We've been well over that 200-day mark on some cattle, but now we're starting to see that start to come back down. What I'd like to think is that, okay, we're probably going to continue to market these cattle at these heavier exit weights, but can we do a better job of managing those cattle? And we're starting to see that, I think, a little bit in our closeouts as we're starting to see feed conversions start to come back down a little bit. We're also seeing those average daily gains start to maybe, they were actually trending down for a while, where we're seeing less average daily gain and poor feed conversions. Now we're kind of getting on the other side of the curve there. And so I think what we might be beginning to see as an industry is, we've had enough time, we've gotten better at managing those cattle to those heavier exit weights. And so I think that's going to be really exciting as we move into the future to see, kind of how this industry responds. Will we maintain, steer exit weights in the range of 1,500 pounds and heifers in that 1,350 pound range, or will we start to see that moderate a little bit? So.
It will be very interesting to see where we go. And I like that you brought up, I know some people feel like sustainability is like beating a dead horse sometimes, but I really think it's something we need to keep at the forefront of our minds of, we are, as an industry, we're doing what we can to, like you mentioned, produce more with less and being just more efficient in how we do that, with managing cattle, taking into account all of the numbers that we have available to us, not only in your data set, but maybe even back home. And I have a question, I guess, maybe more hypothetical than anything. This data set is large, impressive, and contains data from these big feed yards that are all working together for this common goal to get information to you. But do you have any tricks or words of wisdom you may have for someone looking to craft something like this, but on a more personal operational level, at home, just keeping track of maybe some numbers. Any thoughts that you would want to share on that front?
Yeah, so sure. I think that's a great question. And so I'll kind of go back to, some lessons that I learned in the cattle feeding industry, prior to doing my PhD. And so, numbers have value, data has value. That's why we, go to the effort we do as scientists, I think, to capture data and, try to understand things better, right? But what we often see on a lot of operations is we collect a lot of data sometimes, but we don't go back and look at it. And so, I think the number one thing for even if you're a smaller cattle feeder, maybe you're just a cow-calf operator, you think about your opportunity to collect data in your operation. And probably the number one limitation on both sides of that is not to go back and look at that data. And I think even, the cattle feeding operation that I worked for, we were kind of guilty of that. We looked at a few key indicators, but very rarely did we go back and look at, more of the data that we had. Could we begin to understand and hone our system, right? Those cattle, had all been fed under similar, bunk reading systems, similar rations for several years. And then if you overlaid that with the type of cattle, right, you can start to begin to hone your cost to gain regression or your place cost to gain regression. So if you can get to the point where, as a cattle feeder, where if I know corn price and this class of cattle, kind of the holy grail is, okay, so what's my place cost to gain going to be on these cattle? There's a whole assumption that is going to be based on the performance and feed conversion of those cattle that's kind of built into those equations, if you will. But I think the real value is going back and looking at those. And then if you make a management change, right? If you change something, how do you benchmark that change? What was the value? We changed this in our system. You can define the this or the X. How did that impact the Y? And so I think a lot of times for producers, we're very much, especially for I think smaller operations, we're very much in the fire, so to speak, of today. So it's really hard to see down the road or go back retrospectively and, take that time to do that. But I think that's a really valuable exercise because I think oftentimes we don't think about the data that we capture even on a smaller enterprise of, hey, what were my calf weaning weights, right? I early weaned this year, but in all actuality, my calves really were only 25 pounds lighter than if I'd, done a more conventional wean. So, there's some lessons that you can kind of learn about your enterprise, your forage base, I think regardless of which segment of the industry you're in. So, I just encourage producers to really give some thought to the data that they have the opportunity to capture or the data that they have, and then, take that additional step and just go back and look at it. And Excel's a really great tool. You can do a lot of things really quickly and simply. And there's some other software programs that are out there to look at those. But there's just a lot of value in being able to go back and do some of that stuff.
We always advocate, or I shouldn't, I should say we, but I for sure, try to advocate to people that I talk to of there's the statement of you can't measure what you don't know, and you really can't say that a change worked if you don't have the numbers to compare before you made that change and after, like you were saying. And I think that goes beyond just the statement of the fact of we're humans, and innately a lot of decisions we make have an emotional charge behind them, and numbers don't have that. So if you make a choice, if you make a change, and looking at it and say, man, that really worked, because you want to believe that it did, versus actually looking at the numbers and being like, well, maybe it didn't really work as well as I remember it working. And those numbers don't lie to you. And I think it also just helps make those decisions maybe a tiny bit less emotional, lets you kind of sit back and look at it in a, I don't want to say rational because it makes us seem irrational, but kind of a different light than maybe you do when you're making a decision not without any supporting information. But we're coming up on the end of our time together. So I want to give you, if you have any kind of closing thoughts before I send us out on our way, any closing thoughts for listeners or any kind of big take-home messages you want to leave them with?
I don't know, but as you were kind of talking about, your approach to data there, and I often think about, how both you and I probably interact with producers sometimes, and you get to that enterprise analysis step, especially for something that, maybe just may not be working as well as you think it is. And so I think there's a Mark Twain quote that, I'm gonna probably mess it up a little bit here, but it goes something like, it's the things that just ain't so that are really hard to deal with. And I think that's really where a lot of producers, find themselves. But the focus on feedlots, maybe just to kind of, as we kind of wrap things up, we distribute this via a simple email listserv. So if any of your listeners are interested in receiving this on a monthly basis, usually the report comes out. We are a month behind. We kind of do that on purpose because it gives a little bit of lag between the feedlot, they're putting their numbers together and then we capture the numbers. And so, the July report will actually be the June closeout. So, if you will. So, but they can get that directly to their inbox. You can find the information on how to subscribe to that at www.ksubeef.org. So there's also access to the monthly reports. You can also email me directly. So just J Wagon, so JWAGGON at ksu.edu. And we can certainly add you to that listserv. So we're, it's really, I think it's somewhat old fashioned, it seems like, to actually have an email listserv in today's terms, but that's still how we disseminate the focus on feedlots and get that to, I think we're well over 500 folks now that get that individually. And there's several, that pick it up each month off of the website there. But it's really unique to have a data set that I think goes over 3 decades now that's got this, this type of information. And so there's, I think just hopefully we can keep it going, and sometime we can have a conversation, maybe not with myself, that's, hey, they've, got this really exciting effort at Kansas State University. It's, 50 years of closeout data that's been collected. And so I think just the historical, trends and changes in the industry, and how we do things and how the industry's changed, I think is really one of the most valuable aspects of this particular effort at K-State. And so it's really nice to be a part of that for myself.
And I think when I first saw this at the Siouxland Feedlot Forum, I'm not gonna lie, I was a little jealous that you have all these numbers kind of just to sit and look at how the industry's changed. And I will in the description of this episode, I'll put the link to sign up for that Focus on Feedlot report, and then also Justin's contact information, such as his email. So if you happen to need it to look at it after you listen, you definitely can find it, because I think I'm on the same page as him on this. Those reports are, they contain some valuable information and are just a good resource to have. And the fact that they come out on that monthly basis, I think, really helps paint a picture for producers and really anybody who's interested in kind of taking a peek into what's going on at our feedlots and down in Kansas, and kind of be able to extrapolate it out or expand it out to other states as well. But unfortunately, we are coming up on the end of our time together. Dr. Wagner, it has been fantastic to have you join me on Cattle HQ. The data, I've already said this so many times, but the data you are collecting and managing is one that's painting a lot of pictures on the wall for producers and ones to keep our eyes on. It can tell you. If we can tell you one thing, collect your cattle performance data. Those numbers on a page tell you a lot about your operation if you take the time to listen to the stories that they're telling. With that, this has been Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. That's it for today's look at feedlot closeouts and the trends shaping what's next. The numbers may not tell the whole story, but they sure help us make sense of it. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and keep watching what your data is trying to tell you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.